from the Medical Research Council of South Africa. Our apologies that we are starting a little bit late. We have got a little bit of a challenge. It's not a Cape Town challenge, it's a countrywide challenge, the bus strike. So roads are packed, and the schedule of our buses in our parks is a bit upside down. So that's why we are. I can see that you slept nearby. That's why you were early. Secondly, is that because of the challenge of transport, our refreshments are going to be a little bit delayed because the kitchen staff is it's short staffed for now. So we will continue. When it arrives, we'll then give people a break to have some tea and coffee. We are going to start, and in starting we are going to do the usual of us going to do our introduction. And then in so doing, I think we're coming from a very difficult space, the 10 days, and that we also lost two of our activists. But you're disturbing me in this corner. Can I, please? Two of our stalwarts. One, a former minister, the first minister, because I was in the public service and administration. In fact, he was a minister of public service and administration, and I was still in the workplace at the time. He's one of those ministers that we adored, even at the most difficult times. I remember how we were in the heat of a huge strike. And we were told by our leadership that they are going to visit our institution. And you know, by just saying that the leadership of the ANC and government at the time is going to visit our institutions, our national leadership, you won't believe it. We said, oh, so if they are going to visit our offices, let's reconsider continuing with the strike. And I'm saying he was one of those leaders, both in the African National Congress and in government that way. So we are in that space, but it's fine. We are going to continue, we will draw lessons from all those commitments and loyalty that they had as leaders at the time. You are here because we are preparing for our BRRR, and as we have always been saying to you, you are here to empower us in moving forward, but you are also going to be empowered by the questions that will come from members when we at the appropriate time. Having said that, that was welcoming. I'm back. I understand you were last year when I was admitted. I'm back. I'm here. I'm trying my best. I'm Lindelwa Tunjwa. I'm the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Health. Next to me, it's Vyokas Machalamba, who is the secretary to the committee. At the extreme right, it's Zubair, who is our researcher. The gentleman that has just arrived trying to get a seat is Moses, who's part of the research team. At the extreme left is Noel Thando, who's the secretary of the study group of the African National Congress. Next to her is Mbali, who's our committee assistant. There's somebody missing at, oh, the youngest and the loudest of us all. When we laugh, you will hear her. She is Lindokuhle, who's our content advisor. The house rules, phones are to be on silent. Guests will also, apart from the MR, the Medical Research Council of South Africa, everybody who's going to introduce himself or herself will use the mic, name and surname and the company or the institution that you are coming from. Those that are going to start are honorable members. Over to you, honorable members.
Dumela, ki myself or myself. Ke le lokola komiti ya tsa go phela mo parlamenteng ke a le go
no. Good morning, my name is Fish Mahlalela.
Good morning, my name is Rachel Adams, member of the committee.
Morning, my name is Mbulelo Nkonzo, member of this committee. Thank you.
Morning, I'm Donald W.B. Maphanga, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Dumela. Ngitsho le ka ke Patricia Kopane, I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
Good morning all, my name is Lindy Wilson, I'm a member of the portfolio committee too.
Thank you. Over to you, Professor.
Sorry, I've forgotten. Good morning. I'm Glenda Gray. I'm the president of the South African Medical Research Council.
Good morning. I'm Lungi Kwichana. I'm the board member of the Medical Research Council.
Good morning. Brenton Spies. I'm responsible for human resources at the South African Medical Research Council.
Good morning. My name is Nick Buick. I'm the CFO at the Medical Research Council.
Good morning, Geoffrey Pashele, Vice President, MRC.
Good morning, I'm Johnny Masambi, Board Member of the South African Medical Research Council.
Good morning, I'm Nafisa Kadwa, Board Member of the Medical Research Council.
Good morning, my name is Lindy Wezulu, a Board Member of the MRC.
Good morning, my name is Mdruli, Chief Research Operations Officer for Medical Research Council.
Morning, Advocate Ngosinathi Buga, I'm the General Counsel at the South African Medical Research Council.
Good morning, I'm Lena Gentle, I'm a researcher at the Medical Research Council.
Good morning everyone, Richard Gordon from the South African Medical Research Council, I look after the grant funding.
Good morning honourable members, I'm Anvin Pillay from the National Department of Health.
Morning, Chair Frank Makua, Minister of Health.
Morning, honored members. My name is Cindy Lesoldara from National Department of Health.
Morning, everyone. My name is Kaya Kasamba, Minister of Health.
Good morning. My name is Mesotim Shwana from the Department of Health.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Marlon Surf, SMRC Corporate Performance.
Oh. The gentleman behind you, can he come closer and use the mic to introduce himself?
Good morning, I'm Mubin Muller and I'm from PMG.
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning, I'm Nelly Brandt-Jonker from a journalist from Network 24.
No, thank you very much. We'll then hand over to you, Press. What's the problem?
Okay, whilst we're still sorting that, can we start with the... Okay, we have got... some apologies. Honorable James is running late. I think that's the only person that has indicated. Otherwise, you can start...
Thank you. Good morning. We're very happy to present our 2018-19 annual performance plan, and there'll be a couple of people who will be presenting with me today. We did fiddle with the slides so that we didn't have to come backwards and forwards and put them together, but they're not substantive changes. It's just to make sure that when Lungi presents, we present it all together and she doesn't have to chop and change. And so what we want to do, and the theme of our 2018-2019 financial year is to show the impact that the MRC has made in South Africa. So we turned 50 in next year, and we'll be doing a whole lot of interventions to demonstrate the value that the Medical Research Council has. The slide I'm showing you here just shows we involved in the March for Science. And we were one of the only chapters in South Africa that marched in Durban on Saturday, showing the value of science in health research. And there's a picture of our deputy chair, Croatia, myself there, and a couple of other people that you might recognize, Slim Karim and others. Koleka Milasani, I think, is on the side. She's been cut out, but it's just a group around 1,000 marches on Saturday that marched to demonstrate the value of science, and it's part of a whole global endeavor to show the value of science at a global level. Oops, I'm going the wrong way. So I'm going to hand over to Lungi, and she's going to take us through the next couple of presentations. I'll just move the slides for you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. We appreciate this opportunity. We'll just go through the scope of the presentation. Firstly, we will share the structure of the MRC, how we operationalize to optimize efficiencies and maximize science at the same time. Then we'll also go through at a high level policies and governance, how our governance ensures that the institution remains sustainable and viable. We'll also go through the overview of the budget of the institution and also the midterm expenditure framework estimates. And we're also going to show how the MRC strives to invest where it matters so that it can deliver on local solutions for global challenges in terms of the health and capacity development. The structure, basically, we'll start off briefly with the mission and the vision of the institution. We'll just go through the board members, and Glenda will share with us the strategic objectives and the goals and how the organization is structured and functions at operational level. And our HR will also share the steps towards the transformation and the human resources at large. And we'll also give them... We'll give some highlights on governance and also, most importantly, the financial information. So basically, the vision of the institution is to build a healthy nation through research and innovation. The mission, to improve the health of the nation and the quality of life by conducting and funding relevant and responsive health research, development, innovation, and research translation. Well, for governance, the high structure is made up of 16 board members, of which 15 are non-executive and one executive who works with the president and the CEO. And we also have the National Department of Health, which has a seat in an observer capacity. The most important of the committees of the board is the Risk Management Committee. It does risk workshops on a continuous basis at a strategic as well as at an operational level where all divisions are continually monitoring the risks and then are highlighting, and then they develop mitigation plans to make sure that the risks are always contained on a continuous basis. And for this reason, the MRC has actually improved its rating in the National Treasury, which is aligned also with its 5 consecutive years of an audit, of clean audits. So these committees, the Audit, Risk and IT Committee, reviews the legal and the regulatory compliance frameworks on a quarterly basis, while at an operational level, all the divisions always monitor the risks and then develop mitigation plans. Just briefly, the board chairperson, who is currently traveling, is Prof. Mike Safetka, and we also have 12 distinguished scientists. We have 1 legal expert, and then we have 1 expert who's good in the governance and PFMA. Then we also have the CEO, Prof. Glenda Gray, making up a total of 16 board members. We shall go through quickly. The committee is comprised of the Audit, Risk and IT Committee. We also have the HR and Remuneration Committee, and we also have the Research and Development Committee, which looks oversees the core business of the institution. These are the board members. We have Mike and Croatia as a deputy person. I wouldn't name all of them. They are in the pictures. Those are the board members, the scientists that are coming from diverse backgrounds, the common thread in them, they are being scientists so that they become relevant for the oversight function of the institution. I think I won't go through each and every one of them. The pictures are also in the presentation. We also have Mr. Nizar Davis, who is the secretary, and also our CEO, Glenda, there. I think I'll hand over now to Glenda to share the goals and going forward the objectives. Thank you, Chair.
So thank you, Lungi. Lungi is also the chair of our remuneration and HR committee. So just it's nice to have you here. We have 4 goals at the South African Medical Research Council. And our first goal is a very important goal, and that's how to administer health research effectively and efficiently in South Africa. And so we want to get our RANs, our research RANs, to the scientists, and we don't want them to get stuck in administration. And so we're very committed to be lean and mean and spending only a small percentage of our total budget on salaries and operations to administer the health research that we do. Our goal too, because we're the Medical Research Council and because we have this wonderful mission and vision, that is to make sure that we improve the life and quality of life of South Africans. And we do this through leading the generation of new knowledge. And not only do we want to lead the generation of new knowledge, we want to make sure that the knowledge that we generate finds its way into policy and practices and leads to scale up of health practices and interventions that improve the life of South Africans. And the way we achieve this goal is to essentially fund research that lands up in journal articles, and these journal articles get incorporated into guidelines. They then get into policy documents and then into policies and clinical guidelines and in a way of making sure that the stuff that we fund is sustainable through the practice. We also took heart to what the parliamentary committee spoke to us about, is about how do we translate medical science so it has value in the community. And so we've been doing a lot of research on that, and Leonard Gentle behind me has been working with us to look at all the discoveries that we've made and how we translate into messages so that communities benefit from the work that we do, and it's immediately realizable. And we can give you some examples as we go along about some of those things that we're doing. And as part of our 50th birthday celebration, we want to make sure that that the citizens of South Africa know what we do and use what we've learned and experienced and discovered to improve their lives. And so we can bring up some of those examples later.
The third goal that we have, which is very important, is for us to support innovation. We know that investment in research and development improves not only the health of South Africans but also the wealth. And so if we really want to support R&D and improve our GDP, we have to invest in health and in R&D. And so the innovation goal of the MRC is to look at this and find ways of discovering new diagnostics, new drugs, new vaccines, new devices, and all of these will help improve the lives of South Africans. And so some of the examples that we invest in is trying to find a point-of-care diagnostic for tuberculosis at a community level so that we can improve finding the Department of Health has a very onerous task of finding the missing TB cases. And if we had ways of rapidly diagnosing people in the community, even children, we could help solve this problem. Some of the devices that we're involved in range everything from applications, mHealth, the EDL, to anesthetic devices and to other devices that we'll show you towards the end of the slides. And obviously we're very committed to therapeutics, and we help co-fund a lot of drug discovery programs in the area of malaria and tuberculosis. And I'm sure sometimes in the news you hear the work that's coming out of the drug discovery platform run by Professor Kelly Chabali. We've helped fund a new malaria products, one that's in clinical trials and the backup candidate as well. So we're very committed. Not only are we committed to the therapeutics, but we're also looking at ways of lessening the toxicity of current drugs, so to create nanoformulation, to look at new formulation, so that we can use some of the drugs that are toxic in lesser concentrations by using other technologies like nanoformulation. What's also very important is that we know that pediatrics, children, we're not very good at making formula that are easy for children to take, that are palatable. We know that the TB, if any of you have had TB and you see the kind of stacks of drugs that children have to swallow, they're not even easy to swallow. They're hard. They're not even soft to swallow. They stick in your throat. And so we're working with other entities to try and make powders and syrups and other formulations so that children can take their drugs. We work a lot with this in HIV formulations, and there's a product that's waiting to be registered at SAHPRA, looking at granules for fixed drug combination for children, and that will help improve the adherence for HIV in children. So we're very committed. So the kind of stuff that we do is not blue sky. It could be blue sky, but it's blue sky for South Africa. It's blue sky for the problems that we face in South Africa. Our fourth goal, which is very important, is to build scientific capacity. We can't innovate if we're not building the pipeline. And in South Africa, we need to make sure that we continue to ensure that people are coming through master's, PhD, postdoc programs, so that they can be the next mid-level career scientists and also can be science leaders. You know, we have a shortage of women science leaders, and we have a shortage of black African science leaders in South Africa, and we are trying to build that pipeline for sustainability, and we will show some of those programs as we continue to talk. So some of the new initiatives that we've done is that we've looked at our intramural program. We want to make sure that it's optimized. We're doing scientific review and to make sure that the scientists that work in the MRC are fit for purpose. And we are continually striving to make sure that the work that we do in the intramural program is innovative and fit for purpose for South Africa. We continue to investigate pediatric and adolescent mental health. We're concerned with the drug use and the alcohol use in adolescents. We're concerned about rape and gender-based violence in young girls and adolescents. We're worried about pediatric mental health and how to address these issues. So we're funding in those initiatives. We're looking at making sure, again, as I said, that our intramural units are fit for purpose and make sure that they get adequate funding. Some of the work that we do in the intramural programs is looking at ways, I'll give you a couple of examples. We're looking at risk reduction for alcohol use in people who are HIV infected or have TB, so that we can work with people to be adherent and develop programs to help them either reduce their alcohol intake or to stop drinking while they're on their medication. So working both drug use, alcohol use, and how it impacts on comorbidities like TB and HIV. So that's some of the work we do. We also do work with gender-based violence. We're developing biomarkers, looking at cortisol and stress in women, and seeing how gender-based violence affects your immune system and how it makes you predisposed to other illnesses as well as depression. So that's just two examples of some of the funding we do in our intramural units. We heard the parliamentary committee about their desire that we provide support and work with other African countries, and we continue to do this. We're doing some work in Rwanda, Ghana, Kenya, and Zambia, and some of the programs that we do, we've invested with the EDCTP and the NIH to include scientists from outside South Africa to collaborate with us in cutting-edge research. So we're committed to that. We're also committed to a BRICS program, and so South Africa has joined the TB network for BRICS, and we'll be working with the Department of Health. We're the secretariat for the Department of Health, and we're working with the Department of Health to develop this BRICS TB network, and so that's our contribution to the BRICS countries. And again, as I've said, optimizing capacity development in medical science with a focus on Black African scientists. So in terms of our transformation, I think I'm going to hand over to our HR manager, and I'll move the slides and you'll talk.
Thank you very much. On our transformation plan, we've developed a transformation plan to transform the number particularly of Black scientists at the more senior levels. So what our goal in that particular plan is to make sure that we develop more and more skills of people who can be independent scientists producing more and more publications. We plan to extend the transformation plan during this coming year, looking at the transformation plan for the support services, but we felt that the transformation of the science cohort was our primary focus during the last session. If we look at diversity management, we've been engaged in a number of diversity awareness sessions, and as you would know, in any organization, you need to keep on doing more and more and more. There's never enough. So we will continue rolling out diversity awareness sessions. We will continue encouraging people to support diversity. We certainly, you will see in our recruitment and in our profile of the organization, have a very, very diverse workforce as well. One of the things that we're focusing on in diversity, in particular as a result of some of the guidance from the portfolio committee in the past, was looking particularly at disabled people. So what we've undertaken is a really extensive drive to get people to declare disabilities, because a lot of employees, interestingly enough, are afraid of the implications of declaring a disability. So we've tried to create a safe environment. We've also given them a list of very, very specific conditions, which we find has helped. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that all of them will be accepted, but what we find is really helpful is that it opens up the conversations about how you can accommodate people who are diverse or who are disabled, within the workplace. And that is a major achievement of the program. If we look at employment equity, If we look at employment equity, I'm going to show you that in the presentation, so I'm not going to talk about that now. On our succession planning, what we've done is we've developed a succession planning template, which really is focusing on how to manage the risk in the organization. And so what we've done is we've identified all the key strategic positions, we've looked at potential successes, how long it would take for them to be able to move in so we can identify where there's major risk. We've also done exactly the same exercise for people who are retiring within the next 5 years so that we do not have a loss of skills that we had not anticipated. So what we do is annually we'll look at the people who are leaving within the year, we make sure we've got plans in place, and then more long term we look at the people leaving in the next 4 years as well. As far as the human resource management strategy and plan is concerned, it's a plan that we submit through to the subcommittee of board in the form of our annual work plan. And then lastly, the representation of women and African employees senior management level, I'm going to show you in the next slides that I look at. Thanks, Wenda. If you look at the organizational structure of the SAMRC, so what we have the entire structure in blue reporting up into the board. In green, what you will see is the EMC, and then the EMC actually consists of all the seven blocks underneath, as well as the president. So we have the vice president, whom you've met, the executive director of research strategy, and then we have a number of executive directors, most of whom you've met this morning, sitting in this room as well. Thank you, Glenda. Okay, this is the employment equity profile of the organization. So at this point, I want to add that what you will find in your presentation is that I've added two graphics. And the reason why I've added the graphics, you don't have it in the presentation, but I've added the two graphics because they illustrate this data that you've got here on our employment equity profile. I'm going to go along, Linda. And this particular set of data is shown in the graphics that I'm going to put up, which are not in your presentation. The only reason why I felt we should do it, I think that when you look at this data graphically, you see some pictures. So let me show you the first picture. If we look at the composition of the employees, and that's in that first table that you have, and this is the graphic that I've inserted to illustrate it. If you look at the composition of the employees within the organization, you can see on the left what our profile, employment equity profile, looks like. The number of employees are African versus those who are colored, followed by Indian and white in the organization. Of interest also is the number of female employees in the organization. Our percentage female employees is well into 70, I think it's 71% versus male. Next one. The question that is often asked by the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, however, when they look at that particular table is, so what do you look like at senior management level? Because that's really what we're interested in. And in the next slide, I'm going to show you how well we do, and the senior management question that came out from the Portfolio Committee has now been highlighted. In the senior management committee, what we have is a profile that still looks quite good. But I think that we have certain challenges in developing more and more African employees in this particular sector of our profile. Again, as far as the gender is concerned, we certainly have a lot of females, but if you consider that against the 70% females overall, you can see how at senior management level we're not necessarily that well. Let's go to the next one, Glenda. This is the one that I wanted to show you because the question that got asked by the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee is, show me what your profile looks like at different levels. And if we look at this, and if you look at it, you can see very clearly how our levels at professional, skilled, semi-skilled, and unskilled level are pretty impressive. And the challenge that comes up is when we're looking at senior management. When we're looking at senior management, what this is saying is that we've got a lot more work to do to actually have more African people brought into our senior management and into our top management, although top management doesn't look so bad. But this is where our focus needs to be if we are really going to say that we are doing the transformation and looking at the employment equity profile of the organization. Next one, Glenda. Again, if we look by gender, once again, visually, the data that is in that table that you have is just being shown of you in a picture. You can see that we're doing really well with women. However, look what happens at senior management. Again, the point that I made about the proportions. If 70% of the staff are female, why is it at senior management level that we're like at about 50-50? And in top management, we have a challenge. And so the SAMRC is very aware of this as a result of the analytics, and this is part of the focus that we have. It's to try to recruit more women and certainly more African people into the top management and senior management cadre
or sectors of the organization.
Nick?
Good morning, honourable members and Madam Chair. I'll just take you briefly through the numbers. The first goal, as Glenda showed earlier on, was the administration, our key objective. We need to deliver health efficiently, so the idea is that as little money as possible is consumed by the administration side of the MRC, with the bulk of it going to research. And we've actually managed that, where our target is to be below 20% of our total budget on administration, and we have seen that we've been at 19.5, and our target is to go still lower over the MTF period to around about 17. And the other area is to ensure good governance and effective administration, and as we said earlier, we've just received our fifth consecutive clean audit from the Auditor General. Just moving on to the numbers, what that slide there does, it breaks out the income. Obviously, we get income to offset our expenditure, and this breaks down the sources of the income. The grey line is the total income, and you can see that our budget for the new year 2018-19 is approximately just over R1 billion, and that's made up of a baseline grant from National Treasury, which is R624 million. And the balance of $387 million from funders, mainly the Department of Science and Technology, as well as foreign funders such as the National Institute of Health, the UK Medical Research Council, Bill and Melinda Gates. So we do get quite a large component of our income from in foreign currency. So it's approximately a split between 60% is baseline, funding from government, and the other 40% is very project specific from international funders and the DST. Next slide. This shows the baseline grant for showing the historical trend and then the projection going forward to 2020-21. The blue line is the grant including VAT, and the brown line is excluding VAT, because obviously we have to pay 14% and now 15% back to government in the form of VAT. And you can see there was a steep increase from 2014-15 to 2016-17, which was very welcome. However, it's dropped back given the current fiscal constraints in to 2017-18 to around about 614. That was a 50 million drop. And now it's increasing by approximately inflation, 6-7% a year. And the impact, that small grey line at the bottom, shows the impact of the new VAT rate, which has gone, to, as you know, to 15%. That will mean we will approximately have 5 million less funding per annum with which to devote to research. So we've seen that dip, and we are constrained financially, and how do we manage our budget strategy to go through this dip in terms of when we grow our income again over the next few years? So if you look at the period 2014-15 to 2017-18, we had a steep increase in income, 31.6% over the period, and the average growth rate of our income was approximately 10% per annum. However, this is flattening out, as I said, and from 2018-19 to 2021, the funding will increase by 17% over that period, which is an average of only 5%. So we've gone from 10 to 5. So there is a flattening out into our income. And married to that, the expenditure from 2014-15 to 2017-18, we increased our expenditure on research by 40%, which is a growth rate of 12%. And over the in the next 3 to 4 years, 2018-19 to 2021, we can see that the budget expenditure is only going to grow by 3%, which obviously then matches the decline in our, or stabilization, if you like, in our funding. The next slide. So how do we manage that? We're only appointing critical new posts, so when we do approve a new post, we actually reduce another vacant post. So our overall budget on staff does not get out of control in terms of increasing. However, our salaries will increase at an average rate of 7.2%, which is below the government. I think the idea is CPI plus one, so we managed to keep within that ballpark. But you can see the impact it's having on our consumables, where we can only manage a 0.3% increase. So we're seeing a move, more salaries and less consumables, which is what we need to monitor going forward. With regard to our international funding efforts, we're giving priority to those projects which will generate leverage funding. So in other words, where the SAMRC puts in 20 million rand, for example, the funder would also match that. And the idea is to try and attract as much of that funding into our books as possible so we can grow our income base over the period. Now, to manage the dip in the baseline funding, we are budgeting for a deficit in 2018-19 of 88 million rand, which will be funded from our own reserves. We do have a healthy reserve base, and we can manage a deficit this year, which will come in at around about 60 million, and then a further deficit in 2018-19 of 88. And we'll see that then flattens out as our contractual commitments come to an end and our funding goes down to reserves which can be supported by our baseline grant. As I did mention, the 15% rate is, VAT rate has been introduced, and that will have a 5 million impact, annual impact on our funding. These numbers are a little bit small. I apologize for that. But you can see that these are the numbers that you have in your APP document, and as approved by National Treasury, and you can see that our 18-19 we're budgeting for a deficit of 88 million, and then dropping back to 3.2 as our major contracts end, and then moving into a slightly positive situation. So we will be using our reserves to fund these deficits over the next 2 years, and then thereafter moving back into a positive situation. Next slide. And then the last slide on the financial side, this just shows the breakdown of our total budget in terms of the major categories, which is administration, core research, innovation and technology, and capacity development. And you can see that the percentage of our total spend into these areas for up until 2017-18, administration has been just under 20%, core research 57%, innovation and technology 18%, and capacity development, I think it's 5.2%. So that's up until 2018-19. We can see the capacity development is probably our lowest, and we've put some initiatives in place to increase that. And you can see that over the next 3 years, it's going to be going up by 15.3% per annum, so that we will get to 7.3%. Still too low, obviously, but we are obviously doing our best to increase that still further. The administration will decline even further to 17.7%, core research remaining relatively constant at 57%, and innovation and technology also remaining constant at around about the 18% mark. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Nick. I'm just going to go back to the slide here. And this slide is a very important slide because you look at the contract research, the blue line. And so to bring money into an organization and to bring funders like the Gates Foundation and the NIH into your organization means that you have global leverage and global stature. And you can see over the 5 years since we've all been around, we've managed to grow the funding of the MRC to over a billion rand, and I think it's a huge tribute to the great scientists that we have and the great leadership at the MRC. And so I'm quite proud to have a look at those figures because I started in 2014 when we had 446 external money, and we've grown that to almost 700. And so that just shows that the revitalization of the MRC is working, and that the scientists that we've brought into the senior leadership are working hard to bring in extra funding. So well done to the seniors in the organization. So I'm going to go into, I covered this a little bit when we did our goals, and this is just basically to show you what our annual targets are. And it's basically around what Nick first spoke about. And the issue is around efficiency, making sure our money goes where it should go.
and these are our commitments. Nick is very optimistic to think that we can get to 17.5%. And you know, I think if we can reach figures of around under 20%, I think we'd be doing a very good job. Particularly as we face issues around insourcing and other issues around bringing in staff that we were normally outsourced, so that we might see some of this increase because of the insourcing issues that we face. In terms of the science objectives, I spoke to you again about leading the generation of science as measured by publications and looking at how many publications we fund that have are affiliated to the MRC either by being an intramural or extramural unit or having received our funding. And this just shows you our targets that are there. So looking at all the publications and looking at how many of these publications acknowledge us so we can start to measure our impact. If you go to the next slide, it's again, we break this out further where we show you our indicators per strategic objective. So we show you 2.3, 2.4, 2.5, and 2.6. This is just basically unraveling the impact around science and trying to discern how big our influence is in all the publications that occur that are affiliated to us. So what we would like to see in high impact journals is that our first author and our last author is an affiliate to the MRC, that the science that we funded, that the science that was funded by the MRC, and so that we can show that for all the indicators, the MRC contributed 3 out of 4 to evaluate its impact. So we're trying to unravel our kind of impact, and the more we fund and the more people who are affiliated to us, the bigger the MRC impact has. In terms of our innovation strategy, which is our goal number 3, you can see that not only are we interested in funding the innovation, this innovation has to move forward. You know, so we can't keep on doing rabbit experiments. You know, we have to move from rabbits to macaques to humans to a large-scale efficacy trials to registration to product to something in the market. And so we have to make sure that our scientists understand that, you know, you have to move your product, your discovery. We can't play in the lab all the time. You know, people are dying. You know, we have to get those drugs, those devices, and those vaccines to market. And we have to hold up the people we fund to timelines that they understand. We have to think like industry, like pharmaceutical companies. You know, you move your product fast. You know, you don't play in the lab. And so we're trying to make sure that the people that we fund in this space move their products. They're disciplined, they abort experiments if they're not working, and they accelerate their movement into early clinical development. And so we want to make sure our products get to market, they make impact, and they save lives. And it's very important that we move our innovation in that way, and this is how we measure it. In terms of the capacity development, so I've been very fanatical about increasing the amount of money that's going to capacity development. Jeff, to my left here, is one of the leaders in helping us move the strategic objective of capacity development, and we'll show you some of the plans that we've made and some of the innovations that we've done that will start to bear fruit, hopefully. So these are our annual targets. Slide 36. This just shows you the figures that we're looking at. You have this in your documents, and so we won't go through each of the indicators. If you want, we can go back and you can ask me specifically about some of the indicators in the question and answer part of the program. And there's just another strategic objectives, which is available for you on your slide deck. But it's all around efficiencies, generation of knowledge, innovation, and building capacity. Okay, so what have we done? So, you know, is the money that we get from Treasury worthwhile? You know, has the MRC in its last 50 years or in the last 5 years made any impact to health in South Africa? And so first of all, I want to look at how we've built capacity in the intramural program. And this just shows you the number of employees and our fiscal spend on study support and accelerated development from 2013 to 2017, focusing on our master's postdocs and PhD programs to make sure that we are building in the generation of new knowledge. If we look at our transformation, and this looks at our figures according to gender and race, you can see how we've over time from 2013 to 2017, how we've addressed the issues of transformation. Brinton spoke a little bit about this in terms of the management, but what we have seen is that we have a good base. We have skilled and professional people in the category of women and Black African scientists, and so we've got a good base to work on to build senior and top management from the people that we have in the organization. You can see that we do invest heavily in females, but females seem to fall out in the mid-career, and they fall out for lots of reasons. It's the time they have to have reproduction. So they've got their postdoc, and now it's time for them to have babies, and so they may fall out there. Sometimes they've married a fellow scientist, and they give up their science so that their scientist partner or spouse can move ahead. The long working hours, the need to do lots of extra curriculum and after hours work, and the need to travel sometimes limits women's ability to move forward. And so we look at this at the MRC. We look at flexible working hours, and we look at extending the early stage investigator category to women to over 45, whereas normally it would be at 40. So we try and look at ways of helping women move forward to become science leaders. If you look at our building research capacity and funding the next generation scientists, as we've told you before, we moved from funding masters to PhDs. And this looks at our PhD program, and it looks at the breakdown between our interns and our clinicians, and shows you the breakdown between male, female, and how many are clinicians, how many are interns, and what our total is. And it also shows you the breakdown by race. We have a National Health Scholarships Program, and that's to build the next generation MD, PhD, or health science, so occupational health, psychologists, physical therapists to get PhDs, dentists, and also doctors. And we're trying to get to 100 clinical PhDs per annum. And we're also trying to improve the diversity. And this has been a very important program, and we've had some very successful students coming out of this program. In terms of our transformation in research grants, we have a program in the MRC that is used for self-initiated research, and that's around 250 to 300,000 rand per annum, and it's a three-year program, and it's your entry level into science, and it's how you begin to build your science career. And so if you have a look at how we've transformed this self-initiated research grant, I think this demonstrates our commitment to capacity development and our commitment to diversification. So if you see in 2012 and in 2013, most of the people that were getting these grants were white scientists, and most of them were in the University of Stellenbosch and the University of Cape Town. In 2014, I came to the MRC, and we did a complete investigation in how we did funding in the MRC, and we tried to create a program that had equity in. So, for instance, in the past, before 2014, everybody could apply for this grant. And if you were an accomplished scientist, you would compete with a junior scientist. And, of course, the accomplished scientist would win because they had many years of experience and they knew how to write grants. So the poor PhDs and the poor postdocs could never, ever get these grants because people like me were winning them, and that was not fair. And so what we did is that we created two streams in this grant process. We created a stream for the early-stage investigator and a stream for the mid- to late-stage investigators, so that like competes with like. And we made sure that that we were fair in making sure that people were competing with themselves. You know, you can't run an 800-meter with Castor when your strength is a sprint. And, you know, so we have to make sure that we, all of us are running in the right race so that we can win. And so this just shows you, we also looked at the issue of gender and where you were coming from, what institution, because we wanted to see more historically disadvantaged institutions coming in, and we wanted to see more black female scientists coming in. And so you can see over time how we've increased the diversification of these grants, and you can see that in 2018 that most of the funding has the funding has declined from white scientists to African scientists, and that what we really see is this and 50-50 split of females. I haven't shown the gender, but you can see that we've managed to show that in 5 years transformation of research is quite possible. And these are highly competitive grants. They're internationally peer-reviewed. This is completely meritocracy and excellence. And so this is the, you know, we're not taking, you know, this is people who are deserving of the funding that they get. And so we're very excited by this transformation in our grants. And we will continue to look at ways of opening up funding streams in this way. This slide just shows you the category of where we're funding. Remember, the MRC, because of our limited funding, we look at mostly at funding the 10 most common causes of mortality. We're also starting to look at quality of life as well, and are introducing ways of funding to make sure that we're also addressing issues of quality of life. And you can see that we fund a lot of HIV and TB, and this is appropriate because that's the biggest killer of South Africans. But we also have made sure that we're funding everything from non-communicable diseases to nutrition issues. You know, we have the issue of children that are stunted in South Africa, and we're looking at ways of now addressing those issues. We're worried about the amount of women and children are dying in childbirth, and are looking at interventions in that area. Malaria, we have a big support. We have to support malaria, and even though we don't have a huge burden of malaria in South Africa, we have a commitment to supporting the SADC countries in malaria research. We're also interested in other things, other infectious diseases, things like antimicrobial resistance. We fund rapid diagnostics in Ebola, and we're committed to other emerging pathogens and support the NICD in a lot of the work that they do as well. So this just shows you the breakdown in our funding strategies. As I mentioned before, I'm very concerned by our mid-career scientist program, and that we're not building the pipeline or paying attention to developing mid-career scientists to becoming leaders. So, you know, you go from your mid-career to become a science leader. And we need a lot more science leaders in South Africa, and we need a lot more female science leaders, and we need a lot more African female science leaders. And this is our commitment. So we now have five mid-career scientists. These are hand-picked. They're mentored by a senior people, and this is to accelerate their development so that they can become the next female science leader. Prof. Kumalo is at UCT. She runs a science. She runs a skin and hair lab, and she's just been awarded a huge funding to build from CETA to build a building to build this area of science. Prof. McQueenie from SMU, she's interested in myopia and adolescence, and she has done a lot of work on this. We're worried about bioinformatics, and our UWC candidate is building bioinformatics. We've increased funding to fund an obstetrician gynecologist that just returned from Oxford, and she'll be doing cellular immunology. One of the wonderful offsets of funding clinician scientists is the kind of innovation that they develop, and Salome is a product of our National Health Scholarships Program. She's an obstetrician. She works at Barrow Gwynedd Hospital, and she's interested in placental science, and she is actually going to do a postdoc overseas to develop placental science because it's very important in immunology. And so not only is she interested in placental science, but she's also interested in supporting mid-career scientists. So on the 11th of May, she has established something called the South African Clinician Scientist Society, and we will be supporting that. And essentially what we want to do with this society is to create a platform for clinicians to develop as scientists and to establish an environment for clinician scientists to discuss research ideas and collaborate, and to help these wonderful, talented scientists network with international and national stakeholders so they can become our next science leaders. And so I'm very excited. So if any of you are in Johannesburg on the 11th of May, we're launching this at Emoyeni near Sunnyside Hotel. And, we'll send you an invite if you happen to be there, because it'll be very nice to meet these young scientists. These are all people in their mid-30s, and they all have got amazing science ideas, and they've all done they're quite remarkable. Because not only are they doctors, they've specialized, which we know is another 4 or 5 years, and they also then have done a PhD. So these people have been literally studying for 18 years. To get where they are, and so they really deserve a lot of support from us. In terms of other initiatives, Jeff, our Vice President for Research, was very concerned about the lack of biostatistics in South Africa. So you can't do clinical research, you can't do science, you can't show the value or the impact of any of the work that you do if we don't have statistics to support that information, that data. And knocked on DST and NRF's door and did a lot of convincing, and eventually the MRC and the NRF co-fund a chair in biostatistics for 5 years, and this will be awarded to the University of Pretoria. The award goes to the SACHI chairs. You can be both local and international. This is an international candidate, and their job will be to grow biostatistics in South Africa. And you can see the kind of, we're looking at them funding postdocs, doctoral, masters, and honors students, and to basically started developing this program. So as Jeff, your hard work has eventually paid off, and it's going to be a wonderful program, and I'm excited to see what happens. So congratulations and well done on that. The other thing that Jeff and Tabi from our institution worked on was to try and strengthen institutional research capacity. And this is basically looking at how do we build a knowledge economy at certain universities that have not really been active in science research, and to use leverage funding to bring in external funding, people from overseas and local funding, to create an enabling research environment, and to help universities be self-sustainable and to grow a robust and sustainable research culture at these universities. And so in 2015, we issued an RFA and invited applications from 5 universities, University of Limpopo, Forte, Venda, Zululand, and Walter Sisulu, to be part of this research program. And it is a multi-pronged approach, and it was looking at both building both institutional research capacity and individual research capacity at the HDIs. And we launched this program in 2015 in June, and this just shows you some pictures of the launch, some of our old board members, some of the institutions, and some of the programs. And I'm happy to say that we were able to fund 8 universities at 1 million rand each, and with a 5-year commitment per university. We have 18 investigators, principal investigators on this project, over 20 research projects, and several masters and doctoral candidates are funded. And already, so we launched this in 2015, and already we have articles been published, and that's 1 year into the program, and so that's very good. And our first cohort of graduates were in 2017. So this is a successful program, and it shows that, with a little bit of attention and a little bit of care, we can get universities to become research active, and I think this is a great project, and thank you again, Jeff, for spearheading this. I spoke a little bit earlier about investing in innovation and how we need to make sure that we're investing in products that will help South Africans, and I'm going to just show you a few of these projects, and this is under, where's Richard? Richard's Richard takes the lead in this program, and his job is to make sure that we fund innovation and to make sure that those guys that we fund bring a product to market. So we're always on his case about showing he's making impact. But the first one, and I'm sure you remember, my first parliamentary committee in health in 2014, I had this contraption. I don't know if you remember this computer contraption that we handed around, and you all looked at me and thought, maybe I was a little bit maroch bossies here about this thing. But this thing was this thing we called Omniflow, and this thing was developed in the 70s when Doppler. When we still, those of us who were doctors in the 70s, we remember we used Doppler and we listened to flow. And then sonar came along and sonography replaced Doppler, and Doppler went out of fashion and no one even looked at it. And this innovation and this product was developed in the 70s to try and help us understand placental blood flow. And we resurrected this product. And together with the CSIR, have taken it into development. And essentially what this product does is it helps us look at blood flow through the placenta in the last trimester. So a lot of women who come to clinics, their heart of fundus is increasing, their blood pressure is normal, their weight is gaining, and you're not worried. So on the face of them, these women look very normal. But if you put the Doppler on their stomach, you will see that there's reduced uterine blood flow. And this reduction in uterine blood flow can cause stillbirths in babies. And so by being able to do this in the last trimester, you're able to then triage women who have this reduced blood flow and reduce perinatal mortality. So this is a very exciting intervention, and it's working in the studies we're doing in Mamelodi. We're now extending this study to show generalizability. Both in South Africa and WHO and Gates Foundation are looking at doing a similar study in India to see whether this will reduce perinatal mortality. So this thing, homegrown product from 1970 from South Africa, may be one of the most revolutionary things that we have to reduce perinatal mortality, not only in South Africa, but at a global level. So I think we need to watch this space, and maybe every year we'll tell you a little bit more about it. But you can see already from the data that we're showing is that there's a substantial reduction in perinatal mortality, but we need to make sure show that this is generalizable. And it's very easy. You put the Doppler on the mom's stomach, and it analyzes everything, and it comes out with a graph on your right. And that graph on your right tells you, green for go, you're fine, and red, there's a problem, triage. So even a traditional birth attendant or even a husband could put that on in the waiting room, and one could see. You don't even need a professional person to be able to apply this. So this is what the Omniflow hopefully will do. Will help us perinatal mortality in low-resource settings at a global level. The other thing that we have been working with, and this Richard has taken through, is trying to find ways of stopping postpartum hemorrhage to prevent maternal death. And this is a device that's like a balloon. Usually, what we do in South Africa and other low-income countries is that if women are bleeding, we put ice in a glove and we put it into the birth canal to try and cause contraction. And basically, that's what we do. And what we're trying to do now is to do something that's a little bit more sophisticated and measures pressure properly and works in a much more in a better way to prevent hemorrhage. In our question and answer session, we'll get Richard just to give us an update about where we are and how soon we can expect this to go to scale or go to market. So that's a nice idea, and hopefully we can take this to market as well. Not only are we interested in these devices that I've showed you to reduce maternal and neonatal mortality, and we're also committed to understanding whole genome sequencing and understanding issues of genetic testing using whole genome sequencing and other sequencing to do diagnostics. And one of the precision medicine science work we're working on is a diagnostic test for breast cancer, and trying to work on and having these diagnostic tests. And what we do is once we've done the basic discovery, we get TIA. We work with TIA to scale it up so that it can get to the next level of diagnosis. I'm sure you read in the newspapers about our collaboration with the Beijing Genome Institute, and that in April or May, June this year, we hope to establish the first whole genome sequencing lab in Africa. And this will help open up precision medicine and an understanding of the whole genome sequencing in South Africa. And it's the first of its kind on the African soil. What's very important in terms of innovation is to get your innovation to be accepted at a global level, you obviously have to fund in high-impact science journals. And I'm sure that for the one that you've heard about was the issue around TB vaccines and trying to find biomarkers for TB control and for protection. And these two papers, one was published a week ago and one a few weeks ago, basically looks at signatures for TB and trying to look at certain signatures that will help us use as biomarkers that will help us diagnose treatment success or treatment failure and active TB much earlier than we usually can. We fund, the MRC co-funds these programs together with other agencies, and the article on your right was published about a week ago, and what this did was they took patients from all over the world, from Ghana, from South Africa, from India, from China, and they put this all in a huge database and using bioinformatics and genetic sequencing found four signatures that could help us improve diagnostic capability at a genetic level. And this kind of understanding helps us develop vaccines and other products and helps us look at regimen shortening for TB work. So these are very important work, and our scientists in South Africa are involved, and the MRC is funding this kind of work. mHealth, I spoke a little bit about mHealth, about applications, and there we have the launch of mHealth, and there is Unbind standing there together that's Gavin Steele, I think, and is that Richard, that's you there, isn't that?
No, we were talking about green stage.
Okay, so then you haven't changed your jackets or your ties. But anyway, mHealth is very important because mobile health helps put disease information in the hands of healthcare workers so that they can treat patients better. It also empowers women and users of the public health sector to register and also complain if they stock out. So this is a good way to know whether not only are you the nurses know how to treat with the right regimen, patients can log on and also talk about stockouts and things like that. And you can see that this was launched, and you can see that there's been about 65,000 downloads, and of these mostly are in South Africa. But it's nice to know that our applications are being used beyond South African borders. This just shows you some of the data, who's using these products and what are they complaining about. Yeah, we get information about stockouts, and so people can log on stockouts, and then this goes to the Department of Health, and then the Department of Health can talk about and address the issues of stockouts and making sure that drugs get to the clinics. And the minister can then monitor and see who are the perpetrators of stockouts and how can we unlock the stockout issue. And so this is a very important tool for both users of public health and for nurses and for the Department of Health to measure their success. What's also very important about this mHealth is to measure drug reactions. And so, yeah, you see on the column to your right is if nurses or anyone see a drug reaction, they can then report this, and we can start collecting data for pharmacovigilance, and this helps us understand the drugs in clinical care. This is the third slide on this. So basically, this just shows you what people are downloading. They're looking for how to treat hypertension. They're looking at looking at how to treat vaginal discharge, tonsillitis, pain control is important, anemia, UTIs, pneumonia, ARV treatment, diabetic treatment, and also looking at immunization schedules and issues around that. And you can see that this tells you, how much time, who's downloading it, and how long they spend on the screen, the average time to view, and which area of the country they're coming from. So you can see that a lot of the people that are using this is in Gauteng, and then KwaZulu-Natal and the Western Cape. So we need to make sure that we roll this mHealth program out further and make sure that both patients and the health care worker can access these things. One of our famous South African scientists who's a cardiologist is Professor Bongani Mayosi, who's the Dean of UCT Medical School. And we know he's been working in cardiology for many years and doing lots of great work. He also works with constrictive pericarditis, and he's a leader in cardiovascular disease. He's also we're also proud he's one of our alumni. You know, we funded him in a lot of his work and also to get his degrees. And he discovered, together with Italian collaborators, the CDH2 gene, which is a gene that looks at sudden death in young people. And if we can find a diagnostic for this, it can help us prevent sudden death in young adults. We hear, you know, when people are riding the Argus and running these two oceans, that people just die. And maybe these people might have had the CDH2 gene, and if we had had a point-of-care diagnostic, we could have prevented the death. So these are very important breakthroughs, and we're proud that Bongani was part of this. We feel that it's been the biggest breakthrough in heart disease since Chris Barnard's heart transplant. And so this is a very, very important finding that we'd like to highlight. One of the important things that we do at the MRC is to make sure that the scientists that we employ get NRF ratings. So the National Research Foundation, about a decade ago, I think, was it a decade ago? No, 15 years ago. And it was 15 years ago. Started a program to rate South African scientists, much like scientists all over the world are rated. And the importance of this, to do this, it helps with promotions. It helps the scientists themselves who use the rating system to be peer-reviewed, and also helps them with their career progression. And so we embarked on a program to get the scientists that work at the MRC NRF rated, and we hope to get 50 scientists from the MRC rated by the end of next year for our 50th birthday. But just to say that the MRC boasts two A-rated scientists. I'm one of them. And the executive scientist in the Office of the President, she's also one. So we have two female A1-rated scientists who are in the leadership of the MRC. So we're very proud of that. There are very few medical doctors that ever become NRF A-rated scientists. So we're two of a handful of medical scientists in this area. One of our board, Karesha Karim, she's also an A-rated scientist. So even within our board, we have A-rated scientists. So we're very proud to have such good scientists in the MRC, and that they also are part of the leadership, hopefully helping, mentoring, and supporting the growth of new scientists. So my last slide, I think I love the slide the most because I think it tries to help us convince parliamentarians, Treasury, about why we should invest in science and why when our budget flat lines and we have to pay more money to that, you will raise a voice and say, you know, don't forget to fund science. And this graph that you see looked at all indicators. It's how can you make the GDP per capita grow in a country? And looked at all indicators. It looked at economic freedom, transparency, entrepreneurship, knowledge, innovation. It looked at democracy, global peace, press freedom. And it looked to see which of these indicators or variables are linked to increasing GDP per capita. And what they found out is that publications, scientific publications, was the index closest to predicting GDP per capita, and that science productivity is one of the best predictors of economic wealth and human development, more than any other variable. And so if we want a wealthy country and if we want a healthy country, then we need to continue to invest in science. And so we should never, ever think that science is a luxury and that when there are fiscal constraints, the first budget to be lost is the science budget. That would be a tragedy for South Africa and a tragedy for growing our GDP. So that is my last slide that I'm going to say. And before I say thank you very much on behalf of the delegation. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. There is the presentation, honorable members. Questions? Honorable Maisele? Honorable Kopana? Honorable Ndaba? Honorable James? In that order.
Thank you, Chair. First and foremost, let me start by saying that we are proud of what you are doing as South African scientists. We are very, very much proud of your work. But we are very much despondent to still sit here and talk about transformation and still profile people according to their color and not according to their scientific prowess. I don't know whether we are in another South Africa or we are maybe, I don't know. All the good work that you are doing is negated by this very same factor, which is a burden that we are carrying from the past. And we can't afford to be carrying it along as though it's a trophy. We must have jettisoned it and move forward. And the only way to do it is to create more scientists according to demographic realities. I mean, here we are over the moon about your innovations and your inventions and whatever. It makes South Africa proud, not as black or white and black and white, but as South Africans. So what is the problem here? Let us help you to overcome these transformation problems if there are certain hurdles. Then we can actually inspire other sectors of our community and we can move forward as South Africans united, not in our diversity, but united as South African people. We don't have to be apologetic to anybody that we are South Africans. And we have to do it. And if as scientists we can't do it, I don't think laymen even know what we'll be talking about building a nation. It's an alien concept as far as they are concerned. Fine. And, I think maybe it was deliberate that we shouldn't be able to read this. So next time you bring a document, it must be reader-friendly. not something like that. Okay. You know, in another world, people used to bring huge documents and give it to you just in the meeting, before the meeting starts, and you can't even browse through it. And you are afraid to say you don't know anything about what is written in there. You haven't read anything, you can't, and you just agree and accede. I think let us all move together and do something together which is understandable. Now, you said you get 60% of your funding from donations and 40% from government. It should be the other way around, really. So we can't depend on donations for whatever we are doing. So we should work towards reversing this and getting 60% from government and 40% from donations. I wanted to say a lot of things, but the last few slides made me so proud, I decided to forget about all those things that I was going to say. So,
Honorable Copan.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, my question is, according to the presentation before us, South African Medical Research Council, they've also conducted studies, including, I can just mention a few, Rural Cancer Registry, support of the National Cancer Registry, and others, they are there. But I just wanted to find out, or the other one that is important, evaluation of health information system for the National Health Insurance. Can you please give us the update? How far are you with this research, with the studies? Have you concluded them? Is there anything that you are looking forward to? My other question, Chair, is one of their objectives is to strengthen institutional research capacity. And it is said that they will use leverage funding. But checking to their leverage funding here, their leverage funding agreements, about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them, they've come to an end. So if maybe you can explain to the committee, how are you going to complement that funding have come to an end, or what is the possibility for the extension of those leverage agreement? The other question, Chair, is I want to find out why are they listing APISA as a strategic risk, not as a strategic partner. Does it mean that the South African Medical Resource Council will not work with APISA to strengthen the scientific edge in South Africa, or what is their take on that matter, if maybe they can explain? My last question, Chair, to what extent are they facilitating the exchange program among the universities in South Africa, especially to address the discrepancy of capacity of innovation in scientific health research, if any, if maybe they can tell us that. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Ngaba. Thank you very much, Chair. I welcome the presentation, Chair. Chair, my question will be based on the extramurally funded research partnerships. I think, Chair, as the portfolio committee, we have interest in the extramurally funded research partnerships. But Chair, when I looked at the APP, the strategic plan, I don't see where are their targets, whether they are going to be annually, and when did they start it, and what is the impact of all these, you know, because I think that's very much important for us to know or the developments on these activities that are happening. So I was trying to check whether there will be any quarterly analysis or targets or whatever, but I don't see anything. I'm not sure whether maybe they did it deliberate or there's another way of them reporting on the progress on this activity. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Honourable James.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation. We've come a long way, especially in the new developments, you know, the gender issue, the diversity and all. We really welcome that. Chair, I would like to know whether the Minister of Health has approved your request for extension of funding agreement with the Gates Foundation as it comes to an end. And also my other interest is on slide 53 and 54 on the devices, which I think would be very much helpful to be known by our communities, because you must remember stockouts affect our people in the clinic and they have nowhere to report. How easy and accessible can an ordinary member of a community clinic make use of this device, you know, this mHealth and you know, the devices, because to me it's very interesting. And also some of the ones that assist in reducing maternal deaths, when are they going to be in our ordinary maternities and MOUs in the communities? When are they, you know, so that the assistive, we must remember we have a huge challenge in our primary health care facilities where we have MOUs that, you know, how they are run. We are always short of, they are always short of staff, and with these devices it will make it easier for them to easily pick up what the issues are pertaining the, you know, the health of the mum that will be in front of them. So I just want to know how just about that. Thanks, Chair.
I've just got some few questions and comments. I'll take the latter, but in a different format. These devices, in which public hospitals, is it possible for me to say it is in these public hospitals that these devices are being utilized? But also say, in public, it's public institutions, is this much vis-a-vis, I'm just making an example, in private hospitals. It's quite interesting to move on all these devices. And secondly, have you researched and find out, are there, I'm assuming that nurses that are trained on advanced midwifery, are they also exposed to these devices? On drugs and in relation to children, I'm sitting here trying to understand which children are you referring to, because in my understanding, in a pediatric ward, children that are suffering with TB, I understand the last time that I was in my workplace, they used syrup. There were syrup at that time in terms of TB patients. Which age are you referring to? Which age? So that we are of the understanding, because PEDS is from 0 to 8, a particular age, 12, if I'm not mistaken, 12. And my understanding is that treatment there is treatment that is on a syrup form, not necessarily TB, but even in TB that was. So if you can explain, there is no free lunch. That should be my starting point for the next question. There is no free lunch. How confident we can be that the Gates Foundation is not determining your program? I'm seated here. I'm honest. That's why my starting point is there is no free lunch. And you are getting a sizable amount of funding from Gates Foundation. Not that I do have a problem with that, but I will be interested to. The last question. I'm a bit of, that's the question, then I've got two comments. On page 37 of your APP, the hard copy, when you talked about strategic risks, and you talk about key business risks, your first key business risk is your relationship with labor. I'm uncomfortable. If you can unpack the risk part, if you say a relationship with organized labor is a risk, you do in the opposite column that said you are developing a relationship, you are building a program. But the mere fact of labor, organized labor, being a risk, I want to match that with the question that has been asked by Honorable Maisela. We may be unfair because we said to you, please, we want to know gender, race, but still when you put that, we still have a question. I don't know whether you'll be able to reflect to us that. I think you have the unskilled and the skilled. And in your total number of your workforce, how many of those and which categories of those are in organized labor? I'm asking that question because you have put that as a risk and unpack risk for me. You have used very high powered scientific words, and I've forgotten about them. But you said something about a particular doctor who's a gynecologist, and there's a term that you have used. Yes, and can you unpack for me? I'm a layman, so please make us to understand. I'm raising this because we conduct oversight. As much as we have not in the private sector, but in the public, we may not be able to check some of these programs, which are very profound in relation to ensuring that the health sector is able to assist or to treat our patient. We may think there is nothing is happening, but the high-powered scientific words at times are a challenge to me. I don't know to others. When I was at school, our Latin teacher used to say, am I out of order? Or do you want to speak? Okay, I've noted you. Used to say to us, if you don't say you don't know something, you are the worst. So it's better. Leadership is about saying, well, I don't understand, explain to me. In this document that I'm having, in a slide that talks about mHealth, I'm a bit on stockouts. I'm excited, I'm disappointed, I'm surprised. I'm surprised because we have conducted an oversight, and we have at times when we call these provinces, we have reflected to them that. But in your mHealth, in terms of stockouts, Sure. There are two provinces that have improved to my surprise. And I'm not saying they have not. We'll still check on that. That's Free State and Mpumalanga. I'm not saying they are not, but because of the experience and the history, maybe after we have conducted the oversight in those institutions, things have changed. But changed to a and I'm sure I'm speaking on behalf of the committee as a health activist. I'm a bit disappointed with some of them that I would have thought that. But if you can tell us that research, which period you have conducted that research on those dog outs, it's more of a comment and a question. I think those are the few comments and questions from me. It will then be Honorable Wilson. And Honorable James, and then after that we will then break for tea, as you are sorting yourselves out in terms of answering questions. Honorable Wilson, then it will be Honorable James.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. It will probably take me a while to really get my head around a lot of the information, but it was exciting informative. We do a lot of work around TB, and it's obviously one of the biggest killers, or is the biggest killer in South Africa. And a lot of that is obviously related, or is an ongoing thing from mining, dust diseases, asbestosis, etc., etc., etc. And I'd really like some, if you can't give me the answers now, some kind of indication in the future. In going to hospitals, finding that there's no spirometers, particularly around mining towns, and not qualified personnel to actually, where there is a spirometer, to actually know how to use the spirometer and actually how to read the results from it. And that is a quick way to get onto TB quite quickly without going through all the formalities. And I don't know if you've got any research on that, but I think it's a very critical issue, and it's something that's not being addressed in hospitals, is that there is a shortage of spirometers, qualified staff to use a spirometer and to read the results of the spirometer, because sometimes an x-ray or lung x-rays are not necessarily specific enough. It's a curiosity question. Thank you.
Honorable James?
Thank you, Chair. Funny enough, I'm also going to speak on TB. Seeing that TB is one of the leading killers in our country, and TB affects mainly the poor of the poor very much because of the conditions that they live in and because of the conditions that they eat. Is there any hope that there will be, because there's only one company that you're buying medicines from, the country buys from. Is there any hope that there can be more companies that can buy more medicine at a cheaper price, because it is actually very expensive, and it's expensive in a country that is very poor. There's a lot of poor people, and the very poor are the ones that are affected. Is there any hope that there will be research made to get more of this medicine, probably from South Africa for a change, because we are growing in science? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Ndaba. Because I can see that if there is anybody who wants to in this round, because the more I think we're finished, the more hands are coming up. It's Honorable Ndaba, I see Honorable Kopan. Okay.
No worries, Chair. No one wants. Chair, I just want to add on the question that you raised regarding labor. I'm not going to repeat what you've asked, but what I want to check with MRC is that I see they have 600 and something personnel. when I look at what they've raised in the report, I was asking myself the same question you raised. But I just want to find out from them whether they do have, they don't have labor cases, or they don't have meetings with labor. And also in their board, don't they have any rep from labor? So that at least we can get the same understanding with them on, and as they are going to respond to your question. On because I think what they have raised in their report, it just makes us to be, you know, it just raises eyebrows. Thanks.
Honorable Kopai. Thank you, Chair. It's the very last one. I just wanted to find out how much was allocated for the refurbishment for the Ridge Road building that was leased to Mango City University of Technology.
No, that's okay. We are then going to break for tea, and then you will be sorting yourself up. We'll just so that members also have some time. It will be 10 minutes break for tea. Okay. 15. Thank you.
Yeah.